A mother, she gazes down on her son laying there in a casket. She's in a funeral home, and he's 20 years old. She's a Christian. He was not. He was a good person, moral, yes, ethical, yes, but not a believer in God. She tried to tell him about God, but he just wouldn't listen. He just didn't seem to get it. And as she gazes down on her son laying there, she cries and she asks the question. The family buries their 22-year-old daughter killed in combat. She died for others, a great gal, but she's not a believer. Her family asked the same question. A little girl is molested by her father, broken, injured. She grows up and she views authority based on her molester. She thinks that God is like her earthly father, hurtful, evil, invasive. And the child grows up into a world of prostitution, angry with the world and angry with God. She dies of a drug overdose, and not knowing God, the question is asked, that same question, why does God create people and then send them to hell? I mean, the truth is most of us have had friends, family members, acquaintances that have passed on, and as far as we know, they didn't know the Lord. And I'm sure that you've asked the question like I have, God, where are they? Are they in hell? If so, why were they even born? What was the purpose of the life? Frank, you know, I bring these things up because we have experienced those, and I know that you get so many questions, and I admire you for standing up there, and I mean, I couldn't do what you do. But let's get right into it. Why does God make people knowing that they're going to hell?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. The first thing I'd like to point out is that that is a moral question. It seems to impugn the morality of God to suggest that God would create someone that he knew would ultimately go to hell. So it is a moral question. It implies free will. It implies the idea that people have a choice and God has a choice and he chose to make the universe this way. Let's look at the options that we have. God could have created a universe where people didn't have free will, right? And then, of course, nobody would have sinned, which means nobody would have been saved, and it wouldn't be a moral universe. So it's not really worth comparing to our universe where we do have free choice. Okay. He could have created a universe where we had free choice, which allows us to love, but it also allows us to sin and do evil. But everybody believed. That's the one that we think, hey, we want that universe, right? Everybody believes, nobody doesn't believe. That's logically possible, but it's probably not actually achievable with free creatures. Because even God can't force someone to freely choose him, because that would be a contradiction. You can't force somebody to freely love you. Love, by definition, must be freely giving. So it always has to have a choice. The universe that God did choose to create was a universe where everybody had free will, and the optimal number of people, maybe the maximum number of people that he could save, given their free will, he created. And even those who he creates knowing would go to hell freely go there. Just because God knows that they're not going to choose him doesn't mean he's forcing them not to choose him. Just like we might say when we have a child, we know that that child's going to sin against us. But that doesn't mean we're forcing the child to sin against us. We just know that we've created a child through, obviously, through God's will, that this human being has the ability to sin against us. So God has created a universe whereby people who believe him freely believe in him, and people who don't believe in him freely disbelieve in him. And so God has created a universe where he can save the maximum number of people while allowing free will.
Okay.
And I could expand upon that, but that's kind of the short answer.
Okay, so I think what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is it's kind of like watching a baseball game. God knows the end of the game because he can see that, but it's up to the players if they're going to, you know, if they're going to be successful and win the game or not win the game, how they're going to play the game. So it's the in-between part of birth and death. God sees the ending, but he allows the free will in between.
Yes. Well, he has to allow free will. If he doesn't allow free will, then this is not a moral universe and there's no such thing as love. And so God gives us the ability to reject him because he has to give us the ability to reject him if we're going to freely love him as well. But look, even atheists get God's will done here on earth. I'll give you an example. Richard Dawkins, the famous atheist, writes a book called The God Delusion, where he thinks people who are Christians are deluded. Well, a Christian picks up the book and he reads it and he goes, wow, that's an argument against God. I guess I got to do some investigation because I don't know how to answer that. He actually then learns more about God and gets closer to God actually through an atheist. So even atheists, even God can get his will done through disobedient people, whether they're atheists or Christians. So all of this, everything that we do, as you know, David, ripples forward to affect other people and other events. And even atheists can do things that ripple forward for good later.
Right. And I'm going to talk about that, the ripple effect, because I watched your study on that. Frank, I agree with you. And I tell people, I've had atheists on the show and people go, why do you have atheists? I said, look, I learn more from atheists than I do from a lot of Christians. As a matter of fact, you have a book. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. I was going to bring that up later, but let's talk about it now. What does that mean? I don't have enough faith to be an atheist.
Well, it's kind of a play on the definition that atheists say faith is, that how they define faith. This is not the biblical definition, but this is the atheistic definition. And that is, if you don't have evidence, you just have faith. It's just blind. You're just accepting it, even though you know it's probably not true. And so what we're saying is that the evidence is so strong for Christianity, and there's very little evidence for atheism, that it's the atheists that have to have all the faith. Because, you know, you're always saying, oh, I don't have as much faith as you. That's what the atheist will say to a Christian. I can't believe you have all that faith. It's blind. And we're just reversing that and saying, you know, I just don't have enough faith to be an atheist, because what you believe has very little evidence for, we're the ones that have all the evidence, and we therefore need a very small amount of faith. Now, again, this is not the biblical definition of faith. It's just the common definition that atheists tend to use.
Amen. So, you know, I've seen people stand up in auditoriums and ask you questions. Now, I'm not saying this always happens, but I've seen it happen a few times just on the videos. But it seems like a lot of times when people are asking you questions, they're not coming from a I really want to know point of view. Sometimes they're standing up going, I dare you. I dare you to give me that answer. You know, when they want to test God. Do you find that a lot of people come to you and it's like, okay, I already have the answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway, and I dare you to say it. Do you find that happening in your ministry quite a bit? Or do you get more of, hey, I really want to know, Frank. My heart, you know, I want to know more about God.
I think we get both, David, but I will say this. If I ever have someone who is expressing a lot of hostility at the microphone, and what David's referring to for our viewers is we go to a lot of college campuses and we present a presentation called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist based on our book. And we go through about a 90-minute presentation, and then we have open mic so people can ask anything. And sometimes, David, when they get up to the microphone and they express some hostility, I'll ask them this question. I'll say, if Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? And I've had atheists stand at that microphone in front of hundreds of people and say, no. I say, no, wait a minute. You claim to be reasonable. I ask you, if something were true, would you become a Christian? Would you believe it? And you say, no. How's that reasonable? How's that rational? It's not. Why? Because the problem isn't in the head. The problem's in the heart. They don't want it to be true. They don't want there to be a God. Why? Because they want to be God of their own lives. They don't want anybody telling them how they ought to live. And in fact, you know, think about it. Many Christians are going, we don't want God telling us how to live either. I mean, it's inconvenient, right, to be a Christian. But they are just being honest when you ask them that question. If Christianity were true, would you become a Christian? David, they're not on a truth quest. They're on a happiness quest. And here's the problem. They can make themselves happy over the short term doing a lot of fun things, but over the long term, it's a disaster. And all of us who are over 40 watching this broadcast right now know what I'm talking about, because we have tried it many times ourselves. The only way to get true contentment and happiness is to go straight through truth, and Jesus is the truth.
Amen. You know, I notice you have a lot of young people. You go to college campuses, and I mean, they line up, and they ask you these questions. And I sit, look at the audience, and some of these young kids are hanging on every word that you're saying. And some of the stuff you're saying, Frank, I mean, you're flying pretty high up there, man. And it's not that it's so brainy that it's not spiritual anymore, but here's my point is, are the churches today, are they dropping the ball? Should they be talking about the things you and I are talking about a lot more? And if they would, it would bring the young people into a place where they would really like to be settled with God and to really follow God. Are the churches?
Yeah, the answer is yes, because David, it's very hard for the mind to rejoice, or I should say, let me put it another way. It's very hard for the heart to rejoice in what the mind doubts. And if you come to Christianity based on emotion, you can easily leave Christianity based on emotion. But if you come to Christianity based on the facts, facts don't change. And I find that apologetics, which is what we're talking about, which is we're not apologizing, we're giving evidence for what we believe. That's what the word means from 1 Peter 3:15. Always ready to give an answer, give a reason for the hope that you have. Right. I find that this actually has even more of an impact on Christians than non-Christians, David. In other words, when we go through difficulty and we start doubting God, or we get pressure on from our friends on social media for our stands, it's very comforting to know that Christianity is really true. And we're taking hits, we're being persecuted, we're being denigrated because it's true, not because we just have a wishful thought that it might be true.
Yeah. So if more church, you're talking about apologetics, but really, and you hit the nail on the head, it's really getting into the things that you and I just are talking about right here. Mm-hmm. If more churches would address these issues and get real with it, instead of, not all churches do this, but I call them some of the Six Flags over Jesus, you know, some right, of the right. syrupy sermons. Don't you agree that more people outside would look at us as Christians and go, wait a minute, let me go in there, you know, let me hear what's going on. I'm going to check this out. I mean, that we would actually connect with a lot more people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's certainly true. And it's not only just a good idea, it's commanded in the scriptures, right? Always right. ready to give an answer for the hope that you have. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. We demolish arguments and take every thought captive to Christ. Come, let us reason together. God is a God of reason and evidence. In fact, you know, when John the Baptist was doubting that Jesus was really the Messiah. Remember when he was in prison and he sent some emissaries over to Jesus, and he says to Jesus, the emissaries say, hey, John wants to know, are you really the Messiah, or should we wait for somebody else? And Jesus doesn't say, hey, stop asking questions like that, just have faith. What does he say? He says, look at the signs, look at the miracles. In other words, Jesus was an evidentialist who pointed to evidence to affirm his own deity.
Wow. So you see, it's so important for we as Christians to have an answer when people ask questions, certain questions. And I know a lot of people are like me. Sometimes they get intimidated. Sometimes you get hit with, you know, out of left field with something, you know, somebody really like you talking mm-hmm. about, it's an I dare you type thing. Before we conclude this segment, what can you tell people out there listening when someone comes to them and says, okay, look, why, first of all, if there is a hell, why is God making people and he's sending them to hell? Is there a concise answer that you could give us to be able
to? The most concise answer, well, let me just relate what happened to me in a debate once. I was debating a guy by the name of Eddie Tabash, an atheist attorney from Beverly Hills. We were debating at the University of Michigan, and he asked me this question during the debate. He said, my mother was a survivor of the Holocaust, and toward the end of her life, she, after going through a lot of pain and suffering, was offered the gospel, and she rejected it, and then she died. And he wanted to know, he said, Frank, is my mother in hell right now? And I said, Eddie, that's a really good question. I said, look, I don't know if your mother had a deathbed conversion or not, but if she didn't accept Christ before she died, then God is too loving to force her into heaven against her will. Mm. You see, because the implication is everybody wants to go to heaven. That's not true. Who's in heaven? Jesus is in heaven. Well, there have been people running from Jesus their entire lives. What's he going to do in the afterlife? Going, hey, where are you going? You're with me now. Get over here. That wouldn't be loving. Look, if, as C.S. Lewis famously said, there's only two kinds of people in the end. Those who say to God, thy will be done, and those to whom God says, thy will be done. If you don't want anything to do with God, God will separate himself from you. That's what hell is. And you'll be with God if you want to be with him. That's what heaven is, by accepting the free gift that he's provided. Look, if there is a God and there is an afterlife and there's only two possibilities. You're either going to be with God in the afterlife, that's heaven, or you're going to be separated from God in the afterlife, that's hell. And God will not force anybody into his presence against their will. So that's the short answer. There's a lot more to it. But I think it really gets at the misunderstanding that people have about the afterlife. They think everybody wants to be with Jesus. No, they don't.
You're absolutely right. The first thing is, what I hear you saying is, don't assume that everyone is going to heaven or hell, because we don't know what happened in those final seconds of their life.
That's right.
That's between them and God. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. Number two is exactly what you said. Don't focus on them going to hell. Let me ask you a question. If they ran from Jesus all their life, what would they want to be with Jesus for eternity?
That's right.
In other words, twist it around and take it to heaven, right?
Uh-huh. Exactly. And you know, I sometimes, in fact, I told it that night at the University of Michigan. I asked the ladies in the audience, I said, ladies, how many of you have ever had some man pursue you whom you did not want to date? And of course, whenever you ask that question, the ladies start giggling, right? In fact, one of them in the back said, yes! I looked at her, I said, is he sitting next to you right now? You know, so she's just, everyone starts laughing when you say, yeah, I've had a man pursue me whom I didn't want to date. And I said, well, suppose this man keeps pursuing you and he finally asks you out and you say, look, I like you, but only as a, and they all complete the sentence, friend, right?
Right.
I always tell the men, I say, men, if you ever get the dreaded friend rejection, move on. She's not interested, right? In fact, yeah. She doesn't even like you as a friend, because if she did, she'd be interested. Anyway, suppose this guy keeps pursuing you, ladies. He keeps pursuing, and he finally gets to the point where he says, I love you so much, I'm going to force you to love me. Ladies, run, screaming from the building. Can he force you to love him? No. Love, by definition, must be freely given. So if he truly did love you, ladies, what would he do? He would leave you alone, and that's what God does for us. He leaves
us alone. Absolutely. And the key thing is, you said something that I never thought about. Would they even want to be with God for eternity? Okay.
No.
So we're talking to Frank Turek, everybody. And Frank, when we come back, I want to ask you about miracles. Mm-hmm. You have a study on miracles. I think there's 6 points. But when we come back, I want to ask you about miracles in these days. How to mm-hmm. identify and understand if it really is a miracle, and is it from God or is it from Satan, and can Satan even do a miracle?
They've made many, many movies about aliens, but the question is, are they angelic or demonic?
Why don't they want to acknowledge the supernatural?
The seminary education today, that when pastors are being trained, there's no emphasis on the supernatural, even though the Bible's a supernatural book.
As in the days of Noah, so it will be.
Yeah. And it goes down to, well, what is their ultimate purpose? Inaugurate the Antichrist.
If you like me, and you're tired of organized religion. The same kind of preacher preaching feel-good sermons. I'm a mom raising two kids, and I want them to hear the truth. I'm a gatherer right here on David Heavener Live, every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, where we learn what it means to be a real Christian, to cast our demons, heal the sick, and fight the good fight. I'm not famous, and I'm certainly not rich, but I am a child of the living God, and I stand on truth. I hope you'll join me and many others right here on David Heavener Live, where we learn to use our God-given power. I've come to chew gum and kick the devil's rear end, and I'm all out of gum.